Online blogger Belfast Barman has written about his teens in a post for his website and Slugger O'Toole. For many, our teens are about enjoying ourselves, few worries in the world. His time, however, was speckled with homelessness, sleeping in cars, and where his next meal would come from. He's hit out at recent criticism of those who use food banks to get by. He wants to remain anonymous. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen. Sorry you're feeling poorly. As a barman, wee bit of advice. Some creme de menthe and a hot port, you'll feel right as rain.
Except that would make me sick drinking that. Right, listen, why have you hit out? What's wrong? What's annoyed you?
There seems to be becoming a popular stigma of people who use food banks. There was a discussion of this on Talkback yesterday. I listened to it and sort of commented online. David McCann of Slugger O'Toole encouraged me to share my story. If food banks had been around when I was going through quite a tough time in my life, my life wouldn't have been anywhere near as hard as it was. When you're struggling to be able to buy food, whenever it's a toss between whether you can afford to go to school or whether you can afford to have a meal, food banks are a lifeline for people. As I say, I didn't have access to it. When people say things like it's just encouraging people to take free food, you know, it's benefit sponges, I think, was one of the things that was said yesterday. It's just increasing the stigma and making it harder for people who need help to feel they're able to ask for help.
And you've got people, you know, Edwina Curry comes to mind, and at the front of my mind, who say there's no one in this country who really starves.
Yeah, well, she's wrong. She may be educated and esteemed and fairly informed on these issues, but she's not informed on this issue. There are people in this country who starve to death. I read a piece a couple of months back about an ex-soldier who had starved to death because there were problems with his benefits. He obviously didn't feel able to go to a food bank, or perhaps there wasn't one near him. There's people seem to have an issue with the amount of food banks there are now, as if we're doing well off as a society. You know, we've never been richer. One thing that was said yesterday by a political commentator was that food's never been cheaper. Food banks are springing up for a reason. There's a need for it. We shouldn't be asking why are there so many food banks now. We should be asking why weren't they around 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Yeah, there perhaps are too many for society to stomach.
So spell out the reality for me. You were in the situation where you had to choose, were you? You were homeless for a start.
Yeah, it was when I was 13. My mother and her partner had a drink problem, didn't pay rent. We ended up what I think the council deemed as voluntarily homeless, which is a strange situation because none of us particularly decided, yeah, we'd really like to be homeless. But the situation sort of went on from there for a number of years. We were going from shelter to shelter. Some nights, if there wasn't a place available by the time the local council office closed, it was a case of fend for yourself, which was anything from the back of an estate car to sleeping in a builder's workshop. An entire weekend spent on a wicker sofa, which is not particularly comfortable, but comfort wasn't the issue. It was just the fact that there was shelter there, there was warmth, there was potentially a warm meal in it.
So that was you at 13 years of age?
Yeah, that was me at 13, 14 and 15. I was doing GCSE mock exams in school. School had finished for the day and I'd have to call my mother to find out if we were still in the same place that night or if we were moving on to somewhere else or if, in fact, we had anywhere at all. I spent an awful lot of time being a burden on friends because it was safer to go to a friend's house after school than go and fend for, against, in one situation, fend against a drug rehabilitation house, which didn't seem to be doing the job of rehabilitation at all. There was paraphernalia in the bathroom at 14, going to the loo in the middle of the night and having to step over a used needle. It's quite a sobering experience.
My goodness. So at 14 years of age, you walk out of school. I'm trying to remember when I walked out of school, you know, and part of that is, you know, you walk out of school and, you know, you get home and your mum has your dinner made and
yeah,
your clothes ironed and washed and you're going out that night and you're watching TV and your dad's coming in from work and you're going into somewhere where it's a drug rehabilitation place and you're stepping over needles. My God.
Yeah, that was the first place we were in. At one point during our period of being homeless, my mother gave birth. She was pregnant at the start of it, we found out. So there was one particular hostel we were staying in for a good while, which was a parole house. So when people were released from prison, they'd stay there until they sort of had a place in the queue to get their own house. There was no facilities for providing for my brother at this point. I remember specifically when he was about 4 or 5 months, we were in a place where the only facility we had was a kettle and a fridge. So every single meal we had, I either stayed at a friend's house and sort of swamped their dinners, or everything was cooked in a kettle. I remember boiling my brother's milk. I'd sterilize the bottle in the top of the kettle with the steam, reboiling it, then mixing the water in to make the formula. We'd use the same kettle for making dinner. One thing I put in the article, I'm still quite an expert at poaching sausages in a kettle, then using the water to make some smash. You make do with what you've got, and we did make do with what we had. It was terrible, but I'm here and I'm out the other side of it. There's plenty of people in the UK, in Northern Ireland, that aren't in a situation where they're able to survive.
What was
and they need to be able to reach out to food banks.
What was the feeling of hunger like?
It wasn't so much the issue of hunger. You got used to it after a while. It wasn't the fact that you never had anything to eat. There very often was something to eat, but it was a case of, as I say, making smash with a kettle. Or if I hadn't had dinner the night before, I'd make sure the next day that I stayed at a friend's, because then I knew I'd have a meal, until my brother came along, when I sort of felt that I had to be at home to make sure that he was able to be looked after as well, and it wasn't just fending for myself.
How old was he?
Well, at this point, he would have been 6 months to a year old. And he never, you know, there is government system set up for that in a way. You know, we had vouchers that got formula. He never went hungry at all. But it was a case of, is it a safe environment for him? Is my mother able to look after him right now?
You know, when you're at school,
yeah,
and you've got a slightly more conventional background to you in terms of your home and yep. The safety nets that are around you. I'm just thinking, when you're at school, you still, you know, as a teenager, you get jealous of, you know, if your mates have better training shoes than you. You get jealous, like you do, if they've got something at Christmas that kind of you haven't got. All that kind of stuff that you go through in your early teens.
Without a doubt.
And here's you watching every other kid in the school go home to a warm, comfortable, secure background. And you're walking out the door to essentially nothing. Did that not do your head in?
At the start, it did. Like I say, after a while, you got used to this being the norm. Not that you were ever happy with it, but you knew that this is just what your lot in life was for the time being. And obviously, I know it was nothing to do with me. It was entirely poor life choices made by my mother, and our relationship will never recover from that. But
you don't speak to her anymore?
Occasionally, a couple of times a year. I mainly speak to her because my brother's still there. I sort of have to have contact. And she did the best she could in the situation. But the situation was of her making. One thing I was really key to point out in my article was that the system didn't necessarily fail us. The system was failed by her actions. You know, we could have potentially, my brother and I could have been taken into social care, but that wasn't something that I, as a 13, 14-year-old, was really aware of. And there was sort of, not advice, but to do that whenever my brother's so young, you're taking away from his mother, we can survive, you know, we haven't starved, we've never gone for more than a couple of days without you make do. The point, again, strongly in the article is, this isn't an isolated case. I know there's lots of people like this, and that's why food banks are there. So to take snobbery and look at food banks and say it's just people getting a free bag of shopping, it's not. The system is not as easy as that. You have to get referrals. You can only have X amount of food packages. If that situation was there for us, if we had the facility, who knows, perhaps we would have been able to get back on our feet slightly quicker, because shopping, as much as it's cheap, it's all relative to your location. If you're close to an Aldi, it's cheap. If you're close to a Waitrose, it ain't cheap.
If alcohol was the huge contributing factor to really destroying your mother's life and certainly deeply affecting yours, why on earth do you become a barman?
Because it was a job at the start. It's an industry I've passion for. I don't blame alcohol for the problems.
Really?
In the same way that I don't blame cars for people who die in a car crash. Like, it is what you make of it. People do what people do. If it wasn't alcohol, it might have been someone else. Everyone has their own vices.
And given
alcohol
that,
consumed moderately, it's fine.
Given that background, are you okay? Have you got through the other side? Have you a home? Have you a family?
Yeah, I live with my girlfriend. We've been in our own place, which we own for 6 years now. We're happy. No kids, no plans for kids, but that's just us. My best friend always says, whenever I talk about my past, that I'm a lot more normal than I have any right to be. I'd rather sort of come out of it and have the ability to help other people by sharing a story or by doing deeds to support this than to sit down and dwell on what the effects were on me. And who knows, at some point in my life, I may have a complete freak out and go, I can't believe this happened to me. But until then, you know, I'd rather channel it productively. I'd rather tell everyone in Northern Ireland to remove the stigma of homelessness, to remove the social pressures of needing help, of being in poverty. It's a reality for many people, and it doesn't have to be a tragic story. It can be some of people's greatest strengths, helping those in need.
You know, it's trying to find the right words here, without being patronising.
Fire away.
It's genuine. Okay, it's humbling to speak to someone like you, because I'm thinking of the privilege that I've had in my life, that many of us have been privileged to have. You know. Parents that smothered us in love, parent, you know, a roof over the head. If it's cold, you walk inside and it's automatically warm. And that support that you get from your mum and dad. And I just don't, yeah. I just know that I'm a weak individual compared to someone like you, because I couldn't have survived and you did. And I admire you for that.
Plenty of people can survive. Like, you don't know what you can survive until you're in that situation. I mean, there's no precedent. You can't look at your life and say, well, I've done this, that, and the other, so I'm probably geared up to survive that situation. Like, I've no doubt that anyone in that situation would do their best to survive. But doing your best to survive, in some cases, means asking for help. So where people are calling into radio talk shows, like Talkback yesterday, and creating a bigger stigma about needing help, creating almost an element of shame of people who go to people like the Trussell Trust and ask for help. That doesn't help anyone.
Okay. Listen, we have to leave it there. But I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Stephen. Bye.